Hello, I'm Claire Foster Gilbert, Director of Westminster Abbey Institute, and I'm in conversation with Roya Nikar, journalist and fellow of the Institute. We had a thought-provoking event at Westminster Abbey with Dame Cressida Dick last week, talking about her role as Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police Service and about serving as a leader. Roya, what are your initial thoughts about what we heard last week?
It was a fascinating talk and a fascinating event with Dame Cressida, and one of the things I was very, very struck by from what she said was, given that she is such a public figure and a public figure leading a very public service, as she said, not a force, who has been under intense scrutiny for much of her time at the Met Police, I thought it was really interesting hearing how she deals with that, how she processes that sort of scrutiny and responsibility and that pressure. The issues of resilience that she brought up, which I know that you you were interested in too. And also the whole notion of public trust, because we can't ignore the fact that the Met Police has been through a really rocky year, in the same way that the institution that I write about and broadcast about has been too, the Royal Family. So there were a lot of issues that during the course of that event that really resonated with me.
Well, should we look at resilience first? Because that really does interest me, and a lot of the work we do at the Institute is enabling people in public service to have the moral resilience they need to keep on with their work. I was struck when she said there are a lot of good leaders who don't continue because of the pressures of the work. And if they only had more resilience, we'd have more good leaders. And that she really does give time to it. And it's hard to give time to it, because there are always operational pressures, but it's incredibly important to do that. And she talked about going out on the beach with officers, didn't she? And what else did she say she did to look after her resilience? But she certainly gave time to it.
She talked a lot about, she touched on her home life and how important her life with her partner is and her family. If ever she's having a hard time, or I thought it was interesting that she joked, if ever she feels that her family feels she's getting too big for her boots, they will ground her. And I think that's part of her her way of building that resilience. And when she talked about, you know, how sometimes that, you know, the issue of that puts leaders off, it made me think also a lot about the political scene at the moment. And politicians, I feel that debate around politicians has got even more nasty in a way. The public sort of discourse around it. And when she said, you know, we would have more great leaders if people, you know, had more resilience, it made me think, in the world of politics as well, how many people are not going into it now, because why would you, in terms of the scrutiny and the intense muck that you have thrown at you? I suppose someone like Dame Cressida has to have, in order to carry on doing that job with the scrutiny that you are under and the spotlight you're under, you have to have an enormous belief in what you're doing and belief in that what you're doing is right, regardless of what the public and the media might throw your way. So she obviously has built up an extraordinary amount of resilience over the years, but I thought it was courageous of her to admit that she does still feel it keenly and take it personally, because you can't not if you're a human being.
Yes, and also finding that that balance between the kind of confidence you need to keep going no matter what anybody's throwing at you, the confidence you need that what you're doing is right, and not becoming so confident that you don't see what's wrong with it, because no one is perfect and no decision is perfect. It's another level of confidence, isn't it, to keep going, to keep the humility that you need to notice when things are going skew-if, but not to be deflected in such a way that your leadership then becomes untenable or can't last.
I suppose for someone like Dame Cressida, what she touched on there in terms of being reminded of her position, but what it actually means in practice, and she kept saying, you know, sometimes I often think, what does my role, you know, what does that title actually mean? And I thought that example she gave of when, you know, she might go into the tea room with her colleagues who've just come back from a raid, you know, a serious raid or something where, you know, there were first responders there, and they're all talking about this extraordinary 24 hours they've had on shift, and she's making the tea going, but what have I done today? You know, what we... And I thought, you know, it's interesting that she still feels... There's a slight imposter syndrome there for her, even though she is, you know, Dame Cressida Dick heading up the Met Police.
Yes, the imposter syndrome, that's counterintuitive. The imposter syndrome is not as commissioner, but as, if you like, a police officer. And one of the things I'm very interested in is how a police officer, a bobby on the beat, will come to a situation which is really complex. There may be all sorts of issues at play, domestic abuse, drug and alcohol abuse, social deprivation, family breakup, violence of some sort, and they have to deal with that, with it, with a complex set of issues which would keep a moral philosopher like me busy for 10 years unpicking and considering. The bobby, the police officer has to deal with it there and then, immediately, and may then be called to account some months later to go through exactly what happened and not necessarily remember because it's all so quick. And how it is that you prepare a police officer for those situations adequately, so that they, when they arrive ready to deal with them and aren't thrown off by that. And connecting it back to Cressida, how she can enable that in her police officers.
One of the things that she talked about quite early on, if I remember, was that when police officers arrive at a scene, whatever scene that is, and you just touched on it, they have no idea what they're facing. Yeah. And that is something that, as she talked about it, I think about a lot, because I have, you know, I have a friend, a very good friend who's a police officer. And I remember a few years ago when, you know, there was quite a heated debate around whether or not any of our police officers should be armed routinely. And it became a big thing, because in so many European countries, and of course in America, they are. But they aren't here, and that is a symbol of, I think, public trust in the police force. And it, you know, it would change things if they were. It would change the public's response to them and the nature of the police. But how do you train a service? Because every single police officer is different. And no, you know, you cannot have across the board rank and file resilience programmed into any officer, because they may come across a situation which is emotionally very distressing for them, for the people that they're dealing with. So, you know, it's a lot to think about. And I suppose, does Cressida work on her personal resilience in order to try and help the officers on the beat with her? And how do you do that? It's very hard, I would imagine.
Well, certainly it must help to see your leader working on it for herself, seeing her make time for her own, to build her own resilience and her own moral sensitivity, I guess you want it to be, rather than moral certainty. And so one would hope that that would have its effect elsewhere in the service, that people would recognise... leaders further down the line would recognise the importance of it and build it into their leadership at more local levels. It also strikes me the incredible importance of debriefing. So looking at what happened, learning from it, learning from mistakes. And she talked about her leadership partly being formed by learning from mistakes, as well as good mentoring.
And I think... You know, she certainly had plenty of experience in that, and I don't mean, you know, personally, but the force has been through a difficult few years, the service, I should say, as she was very keen to point out. And there have been these very sort of big public incidents and tragedies that have led the public and the media, and sometimes the Home Office, as the sort of, you know, almost the Grand Master, to question the mistakes of the Met. And I think maybe one of the, you know, the good things about Dame Cressida is that you quite often see her, well, we certainly do, and, you know, newspapers and stuff, she doesn't seem like a remote and distant head of the Met. She seems to make time to go out on the beat with her officers at every rank, which I think is important.
Yes, and thinking about things like trust, what a leader needs to show, I wonder, so really difficult things have happened on Cressida's watch. And she's not going away, she's not walking away from it. She wants to do another 2 years. And there are plenty of people ready to call for her to resign, and it's because it's all gone wrong. But you might say the things that have happened on her watch didn't happen because she was in charge. They happened, and the question was how did she respond to them? And did she respond to them adequately? And it may be that we won't be able to make that judgment for some time to come.
Mm.
But as she has walked through those events and dealt with them as she's done, and not been a remote person, and in a sense shown how difficult it is, do you think she's modelling a good kind of leadership that isn't... she's not showing some big, strong, hearty, confident, brusque leader who knows what's going on and is going to always look strong no matter what, but somebody who's going to apologise and going to show that she feels the pain of the people who are affected by what's happened.
I mean, publicly, she seems to be from that mould of leadership because, you know, when, you know, whether it's, you know, the tragic murder of Sarah Everard or, you know, going back some time, the death of Jean-Charles de Menezes, which actually did happen on her watch with that specific anti-terrorism part of the Met. She does seem to be the kind of leader that will hold her hands up and say, we need to learn from this, we are tragic, you know, we are sorry, this has happened, this is a tragedy, mistakes were made. But I think to answer your question more precisely, it's a very difficult question for me to answer. I think you would almost need to ask a member of the Met Police Service if she is, you know, if that is the kind of leader that she is, leadership that sort of trickles down, and how they feel about that. But from the public presentation, she certainly doesn't seem to be in the style of some politicians where there is, you know, an absolute loathing towards putting your hands up and saying, we got it wrong, we need to learn from this, because she has done that.
And as you were saying before, the kinds of politicians we have today who perhaps haven't got the resilience and perhaps whose leadership is more brittle, therefore, I think what comes with that is a tendency to be overconfident, to not say sorry, to not recognise things that you might have done that could, from which you could learn, that you might have got wrong, that perhaps the kind of leadership that Cressida is modelling, we really could do with more of that in politics. And it's not this is not a criticism actually of politicians. Mm. It's more a question about the kinds of leaders we elect, you might say, at the ballot box. What is it that what makes us put a cross against this name and not against this name? It's probably not their moral integrity. It's probably not their resilience. It's probably that they can get something done that we care about, rather than their character as such.
And also, there is a ongoing sentiment in sort of, you know, the public arena that when you say sorry, and this is wrong, I think, it's a weakness. And that certainly, it has always felt, as long as I've been, you know, working in this industry, that particularly in politics, you know, saying sorry, saying you made a mistake is, you know, a bit of a nosedive. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be in leaders. It should be, you know, actually probably should, you know, boost trust in people that someone is able to acknowledge when things have gone off course and correct that.
Yes, so in terms of Cressida's leadership then and the public trust in her and in the police service that she heads, are we wanting a leader like her?
In what position?
Well, in any position, thinking about people in public positions.
I think so. I mean, I personally prefer that style of leadership.
So would I.
Lots of people don't. And, you know, in the different arenas of public leadership now, whether you're talking about politics, which is a much more, I guess, full of much more, what's the word? Aggressive is the wrong word, but bullish, maybe, to the point of no return sometimes. Personally, I would prefer in public service a leader who's able to be a strong leader, however high up they go, to know what's going on the ground, and to be able to say, not all the time, but sometimes we got that wrong. We need to learn from it. I'd always rather that kind of leader.
And it's more realistic in terms of events that happen, isn't it, to be
yes,
like that?
Because everything is not always going to go to plan.
Ever. For anybody. It doesn't matter how wise and perfect and wonderful you are, and nobody is. Absolutely. There will always be events. There will always be events.
Yeah, and leaders need to be able to respond to events in a way that chimes with public sentiment. Mm. And sometimes that is saying sorry.
Indeed, indeed. Is there any final thought you might have about...
I was very struck, just personally, a theme that sort of chimed with me, that Cressida touched on, and came up in some of the questions as well towards the end, was being a public figure in that role, you are so visible and you are so open to kind of personal scrutiny. And, you know, she has come under enormous personal attack from... you know, several quarters over the last couple of years, and that must be incredibly tough. And, you know, as a journalist, everything you write and, you know, say on air is scrutinised, and in this world of, you know, 24/7 digital media, there is a constant onslaught, really, which can get very personal. And I was struck by her sort of determination to keep on going. You know, she's just had her tenure extended for another 2.5 years. Which was very controversial in itself. And again, something that prompted a lot of personal sort of attack on her. But she must be a very resilient person to be able to deal with all of that and continue in her role. Because she believes she's doing the right thing, and she believes she has more work to do and can contribute constructively and improve the service over the next years before she goes. I'm struck by that.
So... very interesting to see echoes of what she faces in what you face, Roy. And
very
if I can,
different. I mean, you know,
yes, but
to a much smaller,
even
minute.
So, even no. So, what you do has your name next to it, and will always have your name next to it, and you will always be judged on what you've written and what you've said. And you empathised, if you like, with what Cress goes through. And it's true that I am in awe, actually, of her ability to seem, whenever you see her, so calm. Mm. She doesn't seem internally to be thrown by what is thrown at her. She's got an internal steadiness that is remarkable, and I am hugely impressed by it, and hope to grow such a thing in myself. But could I just be a bit personal, Roy, and ask you, what is it that you... how do you remain steady as attacks come or comments come, judgments come on your work?
I try not to read too many of them. I you know, in fields like Twitter, I will never respond to anyone I don't know on Twitter. In fact, I very rarely respond to anyone on Twitter, unless it's someone I know. And I think maybe a few years ago, several of us in, you know, this job probably took things on, you know, social media more to heart. I think you do learn to train yourself to ignore most of it. It's not always easy to do that, but for me, it comes from a conviction of, do I believe what I said or wrote to be true? You have to, in order to commit it to print or air. So I think that's how I sort of steady myself.
I recognise what you're saying. It's a wonderful thing to hear from a journalist, an important thing to hear from a journalist. And it's something one hears in other leaders in public service too, this sense of conviction, it's integrity, really. What you're talking about, it seems to me, is integrity. And I think that Cressida displays that, and we can learn from that.
Mm.
And I think we have to leave it there, Roy. It's been lovely talking to you.
And you. So interesting.
Yes.
Talk for hours.
Absolutely. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We may have more of these in the future.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Roya. no idea how you end these things. We should have thought of that, beginnings and endings.
It's fine, it's fine. And also...
I think we're still recording.
Who edits it for you?